a good number of people on the call. Welcome, everyone, to this special call of the community leaders. I would like to draw your attention to the agenda in the pod. It will be a brief introduction about some of the housekeeping matters for this call. Then Steve Crocker, the board chair, will say some remarks, turn it over to Shireen Chalabi, the vice chair, and then questions and answers. As is our practice on such calls, it will be recorded and transcribed, and that will be made available to you and posted on the SOAC wiki page for further use. Again, I'd like to welcome the community leaders. And just to note, in the chat, I posted a message from the CCWG co-chairs who are unable to join us, and they have sent around a note via email. I also pasted it in the chat for your convenience as well. With that, I'd be happy to turn it over to Steve Crocker and come back to monitor any Q's and A's. Steve, the floor is yours.
Thank you, David, and thank you, everyone, for coming together for this call. I know it's we're entering into the holiday period, and everybody's worked tremendously hard. I think everyone is feeling fatigue. So where we are is that, as I think everyone knows, the CCWG proposal came out on November 30th and was preceded by a summary 15 days earlier. The board has had a series of meetings, six, I believe, all told, telephonic and face-to-face meetings, going over the details of the proposal and sorting out the areas where we feel that it's important that we speak and that there are key issues that we have to attend to before we can agree to put this forward. Let me make it very clear that we are 100% supportive of the overall intent and purpose of this proposal, and we're 100% supportive of almost all of the things that are in there. We're much more eager to push this forward and to help implement this than we are to retard this. And so our the concerns that we're expressing here are the residue of the things that we feel have to be sorted out lest they cause trouble down the road. There's five things that we've flagged as important enough to bring to your attention this way. Excuse me. Their inspection rights, the detail of who votes on the IANA budget, some issues with the mission statement, some aspects of the how the human rights issue will be handled, and some aspects of how work stream 2 will be handled. I'll say a word or two about each of these and then turn things over to Shireen to go through details and moderate the discussion after this. And so in the same order, on the inspection rights, we feel quite strongly that it's very important that there be inspection rights that match the role that the designator has and that the community has, which are with respect to recalling the board, either individually, individual board members or in bank, and also to examine what's necessary to examine about the budget. On the other side, a broad open-ended inspection rights opens the door for an endless set of troubles that would potentially impede the ability of ICANN to get its work done on behalf of the community, and that's a structural flaw that we feel very strongly is inappropriate. On the IANA, I suspect that what's going on here is just an oversight, but the issue of vetoing the IANA budget should be left to the people who are dependent upon the IANA services, the operational communities, and that wording, I think, needs to be straightened out. on the mission statement, we understand that there is very strong desire for both limiting the scope of what ICANN does, and at the same time, it's necessary to provide room for ICANN to enforce the contractual arrangements that it gets into. What we think is the right approach is to unburden the mission statement from trying to carry too much and have the substance in the scope and other aspects of the bylaws, which have the full strength of being fundamental bylaws and are subject to the IRP, and for the mission statement to be a fairly classic and limited statement. So a minimal chapeau and then explicit scope of responsibility that says what it is we're supposed to do, and then additional paragraphs that limit us to the scope, and that also make a strong statement that we're not in the content regulation business, and on the other hand, we have to have the ability to enforce contracts. In the area of human rights, this is frankly an area that has been added on to the original business of making sure that ICANN is accountable. We're not at all opposed to doing this, but it has to be done in a careful and appropriate way. The language which is currently proposed is not mature enough, if you will, has not been worked out well enough, and we're more than happy to commit to work in this area, but we're not at all comfortable with putting something into the bylaws at this point that is open-ended and allows kind of arbitrary interpretation, puts the whole enterprise at risk. We have a kind of similar concern with respect to Workstream 2. There's no question that we're committed to full engagement on Workstream 2. And on the other hand, pre-commitment that whatever comes out of Workstream 2 will get accepted as is sort of bypasses the same processes that we're engaged in here. So those are the primary concerns. Let me reemphasize that the board has put quite a lot of time into this. I think we had, as I said, 6 meetings, and we've come away from that with unanimous endorsement by the board. There's been some discussion about, you know, did we take a formal vote? Have we reached the two-thirds threshold and so forth? And the answer is no, we did not go through that formality. I think by the time we go through that formality, things will have to be pretty well formalized. And our goal here is a constructive engagement as opposed to simply making a vote for the record that we've reached an impasse, which is where that would lead us, and I think we're trying to be much more constructive than that. I'm more than happy to respond to questions, but at this point, let me turn things over to Shireen.
Thank you, Steve. I think you've pretty much covered the 5 primary concerns. I would like to go through them again, but what I'd like is just to briefly describe some of the other comments and then open it up for questions, or if anybody wants to ask any questions, please interrupt me. So I'd like to move on to next slide, please, page. Right, so this is the one about inspection rights, which Steve has spoken to, so I don't want to add more to this. Regarding recommendation 3, the board supports this recommendation. Regarding recommendation 4, which is on the next slide, I suppose I have the right to scroll. The board supports the 7 powers seven new powers of the community, but has some comments on some of those powers. So I'm trying to get the scroll. Right. So the first one is on the budget. As Steve mentioned, two comments. One is the participant in the ANA budget. Should it be the broader community, or should it be the users of the ANA budget itself? And the board recommends leaning more towards it should be the users of the ANA function. And there's an agreement overall about a caretaker budget in the event the community vetoes the ICANN overall budget, and the board is happy with that. But what the board is recommending that the definition and the approach of how the caretaker budget will be developed should be embedded also into the fundamental bylaws, so there is a stable way forward in the development of the caretaker budget. The next comment is on the power to reject changes to ICANN standard bylaws. I think the board is supportive of this recommendation. However, the board suggests further clarification, particularly to paragraph 158 in the CCWG proposal, and it is to do with any bylaw changes that result from a policy development, a bottom-up policy development, that the board feels that it should not be subject to another objection or rejection or litigation from other parts of the community, unless the SO and AC that participated in the policy development is part of that group that has concerns about that bylaw change. The next is on page 9, and it's to do with the power of removal of individual board directors. Again, the board supports this recommendation, but the board supports three other things with that recommendation. One is that there should be a rationale for removal of board director. The second thing is that the process, particularly the initial step for the petition, should be the same for both the SO and AC director and a NOMCOM director. And by here we mean that the chair of the SO and AC or the NOMCOM should contact that director in the first instance and explain the concern. And then we want to stress the importance of independent judgment of directors and diversity of cultural background and experience of board members. I think that's very important for the governance of ICANN in general. If I move to page 10, it's to do with the power to recall the entire board. The board is supportive of this recommendation, but would like to stress the importance of maintaining a high threshold for the removal of the entire board. And the board would object if any, if there's an attempt to lower that threshold, because this is an important safeguard that this very, very special action to recall the entire board is supported across the entire community and not by a lower threshold. If I move to page 11, the power to approve changes to ICANN fundamental bylaws and articles of incorporation, the board is in support of this recommendation. If I move to page 12 on the slide here, the power to initiate a binding community IRP. The board supports expanding the scope of the IRP to be available for more general claims in case of violation of ICANN bylaws or articles of incorporation, but the board suggests a higher threshold that would be required in these situations. If I move to the next, which is the seventh power to reject ICANN board decisions relating to reviews of ANA function, including triggering of post-transition ANA separation. The board is in agreement with this recommendation. However, we understand that this recommendation was made by the naming community. And what the board is suggesting is that in the case of creating separation cross-community working group, that working group should contain, include the operational community if the scope and intention of that working group is broader than just the name. So it's just a matter of further clarification on this point. I'd like to move to recommendation 5. Steve has described that, so I will not go through it again and open it up for questions later on. Recommendation 6, reaffirming ICANN's commitment to respect internationally recognized human rights. Again, Steve has mentioned that, so I'll move on to the next one. Recommendation 7, strengthening ICANN independent review process. The board supports the recommendation that the RRP, but suggests enhancements to uphold the state of the RRP purpose itself. We want to restate our concern that the RRP is not the venue to resolve disputes related to process-specific expert determinations. We believe that these issues with expert determination should be considered and addressed within the development of the process or the program of new GTLD. Recommendation 8, on the next page the board approves with it, which is in relation to the reconsideration request and improving that. Recommendation 9, incorporating the affirmation of commitment reviews in ICANN bylaws. The board is supportive. Recommendation 10, enhancing the accountability of supporting organization advisory committee. The board is supportive. Recommendation 11, board obligation with regards to government advisory committee advice. The board is supportive. And recommendation 11 is committing to further accountability work in for work stream 2. Again, Steve explained the two issues of concern to the board there. The first one is that the board cannot agree to implement recommendation that is not seen or evaluated. And the second, that the board has concern that the open-ended scope of work stream 2 should be defined and limited to align with staff and voluntary resources available. So that is overall the summary of the board's comment. So basically, Steve has commented on 5 primary concerns, and I have summarized the other comments where we are pretty much in agreement with the CCWG recommendation. I will stop here and open it up for any question or clarification or anything that anyone on the call would wish to ask.
I'm happy to take the cue. If people would like to have any comments or questions, please raise your hand in the chat or make some notion to be recognized. Anyone to comment or question? Alan Greenberg, the floor is yours.
If no one else wants to say anything, I will. A couple of things. Some of the concerns the board has raised are echoing statements the ALAC has been making. We, too, are very concerned about the changes in the mission, changes that may or may not be have well been thought out in their own right, but almost no real focus on how the various changes would interact with each other. The core of what ICANN does presumes that it can enforce its contracts. We talk a lot about ICANN being a regulator. Now, ICANN, under legal terminology, is not a regulator, but it does the equivalent of regulation through its contracts. And if we have a situation where contracts are no longer enforceable, where IRPs can overturn contracts, or, for instance, in a case of the new GTLDs, if these bylaws are enacted April 1st and any new GTLD contracts that are signed after April 1st no longer can have the same terms in it, we have a really significant problem. So we have a great worry that the mechanism that ICANN uses to ensure that the GTLD marketplace is stable may be disrupted greatly by the changes that we don't quite understand the details of at this point. So we have a very large concern over that as well. And I think it goes a little wider than even some of the references of the board, because we've identified a number of clauses which, in addition to the ones the board have, that are problematic in our mind. On the other hand, I think some of the details of the specific of the things the board has said are just wrong. A very tiny one is that suggesting that the chair of the NOMCOM act on behalf of the community in dismissal of NOMCOM members. I agree completely that somebody should get up there and speak, and it should probably be one of the one of the representative community members to give that to the NOMCOM chair, who has nothing to do with the removal process, and in fact may think that this person is God's gift to the board, just puts that responsibility in the wrong place. So the concept we agree with, at least I agree with, the implementation I think is wrong. The ALAC will not have an opportunity to make a, probably not have an opportunity to make a formal statement on the board's comments. There will be some individual ones, and it could be the ALAC will end up supporting those statements. But this is coming in just a little bit too late for us to take formal action through the bottom-up process that we normally use to develop statements. Thank you.
Alan.
Thank you, Alan.
David, can I respond to Alan?
Yes, please. Please, Shereen. Yes, please.
So, Alan, thank you. Thank you on your comments on the statement. Regarding the board removal, I think what the board is concerned that the petition process, the start of that is the same on both sides, whether it's an ONAC or whether it's a NOMCOM. And the suggestion of the NOMCOM is one suggestion. So if there's another, we're not wedded to the particular suggestion or proposal we've put in. We're more focusing on the concern itself. So if the community feels that somebody else should do that, I think that would probably be fine. So provided that the most important thing is that the director is informed in the first instance whether that he or she is an SONAC or a NOMCOM.
I didn't think you were going to object. I was just identifying, you know, things that some things are easy to support, some things in the details are harder. And Thank you.
Thank you, Shereen and Alan. Steve Del Bianco, you're next for a question. Steve.
Thanks, David, Shereen, and Steve. It's a question about your expectations on how these comments will affect the timing of the process. As you're probably well aware, the executive team at ICANN was quite clear with the CCWG leadership. We had an urgency with respect to dates of getting it to the board, getting it to NTIA. And actually, we really took that on. And this started in Dublin, where we really took on a very aggressive schedule. And I'm wondering whether you have an expectation, or even discussed it at the board level, an expectation or concern that resolving some of the concerns that you've raised and adding the details that you've asked for will probably cause us to slip on the deadlines we set, the goals, the aspirations we set while in Dublin. And we're comfortable with that, and we'll do what we have to do to accommodate not only the board but all the chartering organizations that are really the driving force behind CCWG. But I'm just interested to know if you discussed it and have an expectation about what this does to the timing. Thank you.
Steve, this is Shereen. Thank you. I'll ask our chairman, Steve Crocker, to respond to that. Steve?
Thank you, Shereen. And thank you for the question, Steve. Well, as you properly point out, we've got two competing forces here. One is to get it done quickly, and the other is, or in a timely fashion, the other is to get it done right. And that's kind of the classic squeeze. We have very purposefully and carefully limited the set of things that we are pushing hard on here. We would hope that a relatively brief engagement on these matters would lead to a fairly rapid resolution. I don't think that it's helpful for us to concentrate too much on saying what happens in the extreme. Should we, if we take an absolute position that timing is everything and therefore the substance of the proposal is compromised if we can't meet that timing, I'm not prepared to say that at all. This is definitely not transition at any cost. And on the other hand, we're all involved, I think, quite constructively in trying to move this process forward in a timely fashion and get on with it. I think it serves no one's interest to have the delays, to have this process delayed and extended. The risks to all parties and all purposes just increase at that point. So I'd rather focus on the content of what we're saying and then to find a way to move forward as rapidly as possible.
Thank you, Steve. I see Fadi would like to add a word or two on this issue. Fadi?
Yes. Hi, Shireen. Thank you. Thank you, Steve, as well, for your comment. I just would like to answer Steve with a couple of points. This is a comment period, and my assumption is that the CCWG, I'm sure in its planning, assumes people will indeed submit comments. And I think that's what the board is doing in good faith. And so did ALAC signal at the same time as the board that they have been working diligently on their own comments. And others have indicated, even before the board submitted its comments, that they have comments coming. So this is, I think, expected, and I'm presuming this is all part of the planning for the CWG. Now, in terms of the your comment that staff has been putting, pressure on the timeline, let me be very clear. The timeline has been set by the community. When the request came from NTIA to ask when did the community think it needs to end this process, it's in fact the community that has determined the timeline. All we're doing is working within the community's timeline to give people a sense of what needs to be done, whether it's from our side or from the NTIA side or from the implementation side, in order to meet the community's own timeline. That is our commitment to you. So if in any of our communications of such timelines we left anybody with the sense that we're putting pressure, frankly, that is simply a misunderstanding. We are simply managing to the community's timeline to lapse the contract on September 30th, 2016, and we've been simply sharing accordingly how the process will go and what are the steps in order to make sure, you know, just in normal project management mode, within the direction of the community, everyone is clear on the timeline ahead.
Okay.
Thank you, Fadi. In the queue is Axel. You're next, then Greg Schatten, and then Byron. Axel, do you want to go next? Then Greg, why don't you go, and we can get back to Axel. Greg?
Thank you, Greg Schatten. Hello, all. My question is relating to Recommendation 11, the recommendation regarding the board's handling of GAC advice. I note that this is one of the recommendations that the board accepted without reservation or without a comment, at least at the level noted on our slide. The question is whether the board views the language that requires a vote of two-thirds of the board to reject consensus GAC advice as changing the process that the board uses to look at GAC advice and to determine to take actions inconsistent with it. In other words, do you believe that there is a voting requirement that doesn't exist now that will be imposed by this language that would change the board's actions and possibly make it more difficult for the board to reject GAC advice on top of the two-thirds requirement? Thanks.
Greg, Shireen here. Thank you very much for the question. May I ask Chris Despain to respond, please? Chris.
Thank you. Thank you, Shireen. Hi, Greg. Look, we haven't had a chance to look in detail at the you sent a couple of fairly long and detailed emails to the list, and haven't had a chance to look at those in any detail. I mean, in principle, I would say if you've identified what you think is a real issue, then obviously it needs to be dealt with. I'm happy to weigh in myself once I've had a chance to consider it in detail. I don't think the board is imagining that everything it said encompasses everything that we think may be issues for anyone or for any of the SOs and ACs. So all I can say right now is thanks for raising it. It seems like an important point and it needs to be looked at.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. Byron, you're next, please.
Hi, thanks. Have I been unmuted?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, thanks. First, I want to say I think the board made a number of constructive comments overall. While I have certainly not had the time to consult my own community, I would suspect that elements such as the comments on the IANA budget issue would find support in my own community. It's clear that the board made a lot of thoughtful comments here. My real question is not to substance, but to process overall. And on that front, I would probably challenge Fatty and Steve a little bit on their comments around timing, and challenge in the sense that I'd like to get a better understanding of ICANN's perspective right now. You know, a lot of Gantt charts have been put forward by ICANN, and Fatty has stood up and walked the community through many a Gantt chart on timing, and there has certainly been a message implicit, if not explicit, that timing is a critical issue here, and as we managed effectively this project through its process, timing was something we all had to be very, very conscious of, and certainly many of us have been and have worked to the timing that's been illustrated in many a Gantt chart presented by ICANN. Of course, the Gantt charts are all a result of the September 30th deadline and congressional days, something that many of us have become acquainted with for the very first time and how an actual congressional day is counted. Given the comment period, given the substantive nature of board comments and others that either have come in or are coming in, what is the expectation in terms of what happens next, another draft, and the timing around that? Because at a certain point, we are going to run out of days, and I think Fatty and others have made the point that, and Larry himself, that looks like around mid-January. So what is the board's perspective on timing? Is mid-January truly the end of the line? And if you say no, can you clearly illustrate that we have the number of congressional days required for NTIA to do what it says it must do? And what's your level of confidence here on timing? Thank you.
Thank you, Byron. So the question summarizes mid-January, the end of the line, and if no, do we have enough congressional days, and what's your confidence in that, right? I will ask Fadi to reply to that, and then Steve perhaps to also reply after Fadi. Fadi?
Thank you. Thank you, Shireen, and thank you, Byron, for the very thoughtful question about timing. Let me just state some important facts and also update you on something important, given that the omnibus bill has now all been written in Congress as of last night. So first on timing, I think I just want to be clear that the September 30th, 2016 timeline, which binds all of our Gantt charts, came from the community, not from staff or from the board. Subsequently, the second date that becomes important is the date that Larry Strickling himself conveyed to the community on multiple calls when he asked them to have the proposal no later than December, and then he later said, I'm okay if I slip by a couple of weeks from there so that I can process this proposal through the U.S. government and interagency processes. So again, those dates came from the U.S. government, not from staff or from me. Now, we worked around those dates, and we built a full Gantt chart to understand why is Larry asking for the proposal around that time. Now, until last night, a very important factor that was built into all these timelines is what you refer to very eloquently, the legislative days. The days generally where both houses of Congress are in session. Now, we were very concerned about that because 2016 is an election year, and when we saw the legislative day calendar, we were quite, of course, taken aback by how much Congress is not in session next year as a result of the election year. And so we were concerned that this will lengthen the process. Now, that was because there is an important requirement in the Dot-Com Act, should it become law, that Larry, after he finishes his interagency review and
I think we've just lost Fadi.
We did.
Yeah, can you back
that? Yes, you are.
Okay, my apologies. I'm not sure where you lost me, so I'm going to go back just to the legislative days to say that we were concerned because when Larry was done with his review and signaled that he's okay with our proposal, the Dot-Com Act forces him to give a certain number of legislative days to Congress when they're in session to basically review and hold hearings, etc. Now, here's the news as of last night. So this is not even 24 hours old. The Dot-Com Act did not make it into the omnibus law. Now, the law is not passed yet. I think Jenny can correct me. But at least the package is done, and the Dot-Com Act did not make it. Now, that's bad news and good news. Let me focus on the good news. The good news is it means Larry is not bound by a certain number of legislative days. So let me leave that aside and come back to your question, if I may, Byron. So now, let's say we do not deliver the proposal on time to Larry in January. And we either need another couple of months, maybe we decide to do another public comment period. I'm not sure what this is all the CCWG's decision, and unfortunately they're not with us on the call, so I don't know what their plans are, and maybe they don't know yet until all the comments are in. But let's assume Larry doesn't get the final proposal with chartering organizations' approval until, I don't know, April or May because of delays in comment periods. Then Larry said he needs 60 to 90 days to review the proposal across all the agencies in Washington. and to do legal reviews, etc., and be able to finish his work and then tell us he's good to go so we can implement the bylaws, and then we go to the Congress for hearings. And Larry committed to Congress, as I did, that even if the Dotcom Act doesn't pass, we will still give Congress the chance to obviously review what we do. But if we don't give Larry things till April, and he needs 60 to 90 days to finish his inter-administration, inter-agency work, by the time he's done, Congress would be gone. Because this year, Congress is gone for a full, nonstop 6 weeks until early September. If that happens, then we will be in a position, there will be no other option for Larry and us but to extend the NTIA contract. So that's the fear we have, that's the concern we have, that makes us think that a delivery in January, allowing Larry to review it in February, March, April, allow Congress to look at it in May, June, and then by then we get the clear, Akram and his team start implementing, they've already informed us they need 4 months to do that, would get us there. And my final comment, Byron, is that the current schedule built by the CCWG includes in its timing a supplemental report option after the current comment period is done. Now, the CCWG, I am sure, I want to assure you, and the co-chairs as well, are deeply committed to get this done by September 2016. I'm not sending here any signals or messages otherwise. I know them, and I know that they are deeply committed to do that, and they want to get all of this done. So I think what we need to do is work backwards, basic project management, and see how we can advance the work quickly so that we can meet the deadline of the 7th of January to deliver to the chartering organizations and the 22nd to the board. I'll stop here and see if you have any questions, but I hope this was helpful to you.
This is Crocker. Let me, Fadi, just push in on one element. In what you've just covered, you contrasted the schedule that we had been talking about of having a proposal in January versus one of getting the proposal in April. My thinking is that even though the Dotcom Act isn't included, the dynamics are more similar than they are different. And I think you laid out the details. There'll still be congressional hearings and so forth. And that my translation of all that is there might be room to add some number of days, but adding months to our schedule will be just as fatal without the Dotcom Act as it would have been with. And so that our thinking in terms of timing ought to be in small increments rather than in large increments.
Thank you, Steve. I just wanted to draw your attention. Axel, please, go ahead.
David, I just wanted to, this is Shireen, ask Fadi to comment
yes,
on
please.
One thing. Fadi, you mentioned that the four-month implementation. Could you comment on that? Is this a hard estimate or a flexible one? What's your view on that?
I think it's a flexible estimate. Our team has put in quite a bit of work in detailing all the pieces to that. But, I mean, it's not a month. Okay, there could be some room there with the 4 months, but right now our team, led by Trang and Akram, are confirming that a four-month time frame is about the right time frame, but I think there's some flexibility there. My sense that is as we get closer to the end here, we will be very active in getting NTIA to let us do as many things as possible earlier so that we can advance this timeline. But right now, given our discussions with them and given our assessment, it's, you know, in that time frame.
Thank you. David, back to you for the line.
Thank you very much. Before I go to Phil Corin, who has a question, Axel Pavlik of the NRO couldn't get on his audio in time. He has some problems. He just wanted to say in the chat, would want to reiterate Numbers Community's concern about timeline slippage and appeal to all parties to remain focused on timely results and to avoid hard and fast positions. Thank you, Axel. I'll now go to Phil Corin, and then Byron also has his hand up. Phil.
Yes, thank you, David, and I hope you can hear me okay. I have more of a comment in that, commenting further on what's in the Omnibus Appropriations Bill. Fadi is, of course, correct that the Dot-Com Act is not in there, and I personally think that was probably the last chance for that bill to advance. I don't see Senate leadership giving Senator Cruz an opportunity to grandstand on it early next year, so it may not pass. I believe the language of the bill contemplates its possible passage and enactment. It makes clear that even if it is passed, that if the 30 legislative days goes beyond September 30th next year, it wouldn't delay the transition. And just continue, I want to make clear, I'm not in any way saying that anything should slow down. I believe that the community should continue to work with the board and staff with all deliberate speed, but Fadi did not note that the same bill that doesn't contain the Dot-Com Act does extend the freeze on NTA's ability to complete the transition until September 30th of next year, and that's the same language that Larry Strickling publicly stated this past January would, in fact, prevent the transition from happening while it's in effect. So the unknown is whether that language will be continued in the FY17 bill or any continuing appropriations bill that Congress works on early next fall to continue funding the government, because its funding runs out on September 30th. So I think I just wanted to note for the record that freeze on NTI's ability to complete the transition is in there, does prevent it from happening till September 30th. If it's allowed to expire, the transition could proceed on October 1, even if the Dot-Com Act is in effect and the legislative day period has not run completely. So I just wanted to get that on the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. I think Fadi would like to just respond briefly and clarify. Fadi?
Sure.
Yeah, Phil, you're spot on. Of course, we're very close to all of this, and thank you for your help as well in the process and helping us understand it. And you are right on that while we did not get the Dot-Com Act, the rider that Congressman Culbertson had supported has remained in the bill. But I think the good news about that, Phil, which I want to share with the community, I know you're aware of this, is that that rider, which limits NPIA from spending resources on the transition, is now clearly limited to 1 year. There was a point where we were concerned it would be extended to 2 years, but it's now very specifically ending on September 30th, 2016. Moreover, and maybe more importantly, we have confirmed now that rider continues to be interpreted as not a limiting factor on NTIA to continue its work in assessing our proposal, in building drafts of changes to various agreements, so that by the time that deadline arrives, NTIA can execute on whatever it needs to execute and let our contract lapse as it needs to lapse so that on October 1st we could enter a post-NTIA phase. So that's confirmed as of a few hours ago, just to be clear on that. So I think business as usual, at least on that front, but you're spot on about that being still in the omnibus bill.
Thank you. Byron, you're next, and Caboose is trying to give us a question. I think he typed it in the chat. I'll read it. But Byron, please.
Okay, thanks. Phil has much more eloquently said what I was going to try to say, so most of my comment has already been stated. But I do have a question just around the sort of literally right at the edge of the period. There's two things that I'm unclear on. One is the actual timing. Even as it stands, if nothing else changes, NTIA is not allowed to, quote, spend any money or do anything on this project until after the 30th. But the contract runs out on the 30th. Do we have an actual timing issue that would prevent this from happening due just to the timing of a day at the end of the period? And my second question is maybe more of a comment, that this is based on what we see in the current appropriations bill, but of course, as Phil has just said, we don't know what will happen in the next appropriations bill, which will cover off in part this period. So if the language remains the same, we may be okay, but if anything changes, we may be in trouble. So that is, I think, a risk we must identify. So I guess my question is, am I correct in what I'm seeing here, or am I missing something and I'm wrong? And I wonder if my CAN staff or Fatty or somebody could provide me some guidance on that.
Thank you, Byron. Back to Fadi. Fadi, do you want to respond to Byron's questions?
Yes. Thank you, Shireen, and thank you, Byron, for this important clarification. No. The simple answer is no. There will be our assessment and our discussions with the folks in NTIA that would not be an issue. What would happen here is if that language was, if there was an appetite to extend that language past 2016, I think the language would not have been limited here. We have gotten now multiple assessments by different people that this limitation on this rider to end next year is firmly a signal that that's the end of that rider. So what Larry will be able to do is to simply let our contract lapse. He would have been working along the same timeline with others, including VeriSign, for example, for the cooperative agreement to agree with them how he may want to adjust these things. And then by October 1st, he would be on those other things, leading us to a completed transition by then. So our assessment at the moment, Byron, to answer your question, is that we're in good shape here.
Okay. Kavush, I'm glad you've joined us. You have a question, and you also typed some things in the chat. Kavush, you have the floor.
Yes. Do you hear me, please?
Yes, we do. Please, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, good day, good morning, whatever time you have. I have a question. I have put it to some extent in the chat. Suppose that the CCWG comes to a sort of a supplement, if any, that I'm not sure. I cannot speak for CCWG. And suppose that we have a supplement. Generally speaking, that supplement should be subject to another public comment 4, and there should be minimum 3 weeks, 20 days or 21 days for that. And after that, there would be a final report. How do you see the situation that if the difficulties or contentious issue is not resolved between the board and the CCWG, in that supplement, there would not be another surprise that the board comes with a new thing that still we are not happy with that? So would it be a Pandora box that we try to have 3, 6, 7 public comments, and then until the time that CCWG people are totally exhausted, and then we give up and be at the disposal of the board and say that you are the master. Please say what CCWG could do, and just dictate us, and we just take down what you say and put it in the name of CCWD. It is an extreme situation. I'm sorry to be so frank, but that is the situation. But before I give up the floor, I am a little bit surprised that in Los Angeles we did whatever we could afterwards, and we had all board members actively participating, and never we heard any of the comments that is recently been made. There were very, very active board members, but we had discussed together. I called it in my literature a negotiation, because when the people talk together, they negotiate with each other to have some sort of consensus. But there was not such an extreme situation that now is raised. I'm not objecting to the board's comment. I'm just talking of the modality, of the way, and timing of that. So I would be very appreciated if you could say what is your expectation, if there would be any supplement, would be any possibility that this contention be resolved. There are some discussions now between some people and board, but I don't know the situation. Just a question, and I'm sorry if I'm so clear, if I'm so frank. Thank you.
Cavus, thank you very much. Thank you for your question. I will ask our chairman, Steve, to respond to that. Steve?
Thank you, Shireen, and thank you very much, Cavus. You allude to everyone being tired and exhaustion. I think we're all empathetic with that. I think that's a factor that affects, of course, the CCWG and the board as well. With respect to the comments that we have made, there are no surprises there. These are points that we have made in the past, and in keeping with our promise that we would not be in the position of raising of new elements as a surprise, we have not done so. And of course, we will not do so in the future. What has to happen, however, is that the comments that we have raised, and particularly the ones which we are now identifying as ones that have to be dealt with, do have to be dealt with. We took note of the fact that when we raised these before, that the next round of output from the CCWG did not address or properly address these items. And whether or not this was by intent or just the press of time or as you say, a fatigue factor, it doesn't matter at this point, but it has to be dealt with. I appreciate your concern about the extreme situation, but I think I'd much rather concentrate on how do we get to a constructive answer in a timely and relatively quick fashion rather than what happens in the extreme. None of us, I think, are interested in the game-playing aspect of how do you stretch this out to the point where it all falls apart. I think we'll rather work constructively to make this come together into a success. So I think we're close, and I think with even though it taxes us all from an energy and time perspective, I think that we're in a position to iron out these details and put things in order and all move together positively, rather than spending time discussing sort of what the extremes are. Worst-case analysis is only going to lead to very depressing results, and that's not where I want to focus at this time.
Thank you, Steve. We are at the top of the hour, and I know we have to respect the time limits of people in there and their schedules. Shireen, do you have any other closing comments or others from the board or Fadi?
No, I think Steve said it all, and I think the board has made those comments in good faith. We want to work with the timeline of the CCWG, and personally I feel on the five areas of primary concern, I'm sure that we can reach some sensible agreement on that, because there are not extreme recommendation in my personal view. So I'll leave it to that.
Okay, thank you. And I just wanted to point out that we will be making available the slides and obviously the transcripts and recordings, and I'll send that link to you as soon as we get that. And with that, I would like
David,
to...
David, this is Shereen. David.
Yes, Shereen.
I'm happy to say Caboose
please.
Has a supplementary question. I think it would be appropriate just to take it. If anybody wants to listen, that's fine. Caboose?
Thank you. I'm sorry. Caboose, please go ahead.
Caboose?
Are you on mute, Caboose?
David, can you reach out to Caboose?
I am working on that right now. In the meantime, we do have a hand up from Alberto. May we go with quickly a comment from Alberto. Alberto, please.
Thank you. Alberto Soto speaking, David. Thank you very much. Greg spoke about the two-third majority in order to approve GAC advice by the board. I said something before, and I repeat it now. I agree in that these two-thirds majority should not be like that, because then the GAC should have or would be more important in the multi-stakeholder model. I represent the end users, and GAC decisions many a time have to do with the goodwill or lack of goodwill towards end users. Thank you.
Thank you. Caboose?
Caboose, please.
That my position as a participant was always to find a consensus, a solution, a compromise. I have been successful everywhere. In the WRC, I was among 3,700 delegates, the only one proposed solutions and having peaceful and successful conference. I'm proposing that. I'm suggesting you, what is your modality or board modality to resolve this issue in time with plus minus few days or some week or 1 or 2 weeks after? Do you have a procedures, a way forward, a sort of the arrangement of meetings, prioritizing the most important critical issues and leave the less important for email discussions? So I'm asking the question. We have worked a lot, more than a year and something. I was working with the CCWD when I was hospitalized, operation in the hospital in the second day. I communicating every day. So I was tirelessly putting effort, and I don't want that this effort would not be productive. Thank you.
Caboose, this is Shereen. Thank you. We will work to the CCWG timeline and process. We're ready and stand by for any dialogue as soon as the CCWG is ready. So we have no defined process of our own. We're just standing by and wishing to engage and enter into a dialogue, particularly on those five primary issues. Thank you. David?
Thank you, Caboose and Shereen. With that, seeing no hands up in the chat room, any other questions, I will thank everyone for their participation and time on this call, important call today, discussing this issue and the recordings, transcripts, and slides will be made available. I will send a note around to everyone shortly where you can find those. And with that, I'd like to thank everyone, wishing them a good evening, good afternoon, or good morning, wherever they may be. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. This concludes today's call. We now stop the recording.